Hello and welcome to the reading of the Courier for Thursday, August 31st, the last day of August. Good heavens, where has the time gone? I am your narrator, Peter Welch, and we are going to be reading the e-edition of the Courier today. So why don't we take a look and see what all is going on here. Travels with Tracer. Veterans face challenges with TSA when flying with service dogs. In Cedar Rapids, Trent Dirks removes his belt and shoes and items from his pockets and places them in the plastic airport screening bin while his service dog Tracer sits patiently at his side. Transportation Secretary Officer ushers them to a walk-through metal detector and explains the screening process. The white Labrador playfully licks Dirks as he listens. The man and dog walk through the metal detector together, which sets off alarms from Tracer's leash and harness. The security officer directs them to turn around and walk back through. Dirk tells Tracer to sit and put the leash in the lab's mouth to hold as he walks through the detector by himself. The alarm doesn't go off this time. Dirk rejoins Tracer, who has been sitting patiently 6 feet away. Dirk takes the leash out of Tracer's mouth. The officer kneels down, gently pats down, and inspects Tracer's harness. The pair then walks through the detector again together. The officer swabs Dirk's hands with a cotton cloth to test for possible explosive residue. The walkthrough Monday at the Eastern Iowa Airport in Cedar Rapids was part of a screening demonstration organized by Iowa Republican U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson. Hinson of Marion has been working with Transportation Security Administration officials to ease the challenges that veterans and those with disabilities face when traveling with service animals. Dirks, a Grundy Center native and retired U.S. Army sergeant, served in Afghanistan and, like many veterans, suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder following his deployment. He found support through Retrieving Freedom in Waverly. The organization trained service dogs for veterans, and Dirks was paired with his canine companion, Tracer, who accompanied him to a hospital for intensive treatment and now lives with him. Hinson met Dirks and Tracer when she visited Retrieving Freedom in 2021. The duo has inspired her efforts in Congress to improve veterans' mental health care access, and she invited Dirk as her guest at this year's State of the Union address. Hinson said that she learned of some of the challenges Dirks and other veterans with service animals face when going through airport security. TSA is intimidating, regardless of who you are, Dirks told reporters. Or it can be really intimidating, but then you add disabilities or traveling with a four-legged service animal, and it just creates additional challenges. You want to make sure that your service animal is properly trained going through TSA or any public space. One particular worry for those with service animals, Dirks said, is being separated from their animal during the screening process, even if just by feet. You want to make sure that service animal is properly trained so you can separate 6 foot between the dog so you can walk through without alarming the metal detector and the dog behaves and stays in sitting position, Dirk said. That's one of the biggest challenges that I face going through TSA. Obviously, Tracer is pretty well trained. But that is a concern, I would say, for someone going through TSA. TSA will not separate owners from their service animal. Passengers, though, must tell the screening officer that they are traveling with a service animal, and both they and their service animal must go through a metal detector and or be patted down, according to the agency. If the metal detector alarm goes off, the owner and the service animal will undergo additional screening. Iowa TSA Federal Security Director John Bright said those who have concerns about screening can ask to speak with a supervisor or passenger support specialist during the process. TSA also offers screening information and assistance to travelers through TSA Cares, And that's the following number, 855-787-2227, and online tsa.gov. Hinsett said that one of the reasons she engaged Dirks and the TSA was to establish a standard. So everywhere you travel, you're going to experience that same procedure. So we make it as easy as possible for veterans and service animals to travel. Bright said that the TSA uses a standard operating procedure at all airports when processing service animals through the checkpoint. Bright encouraged passengers with service animals to contact TSA CARES within 72 hours of their flight so they know what to expect during the airport security screening process and to provide advance notice to local TSA officials. With the COVID-19 national emergency over, we want more people to be traveling and feel comfortable doing so, Hinsett said. No matter what challenges you might face, whether it's a disability that requires you to have a service animal or a medical challenge, such as insulin pumps, we just want to make sure that people feel comfortable traveling and know that their options are and what their options are, she said. For all, Dirk said that his experience going through the TSA security Monday went well. Beyond TSA screening, Dirk said that there are also inconsistencies among the airlines, and it can be very challenging trying to navigate an airline's policies and procedures flying with and registering a service animal. And each airline is different in what they require to register a service animal to fly, he went on to say. Well, okay, now let's take a look here a little bit more locally here at Cedar Falls. Symphony's new season, a celebration of collaboration. 15 years ago, Gary Kelly and the Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony Orchestra collaborated on a reimagining of the planets. It was the beginning of a groundbreaking artistic partnership that also has produced Bach and the Blues, a new Nutcracker, MLK, and other world premiere events. The longtime alliance will be celebrated in an 8 p.m. concert Saturday at River Place Plaza in downtown Cedar Falls. It is free and open to the public. Rain date is on Sunday. It's the third year running that we are done that we've done a Labor Day weekend concert, and we see these concerts as our gift to the community, said Jason Weinberger of WCF Symphony conductor. This is a sampler, a celebration of Gary Kelly, a retrospective of projects that we've done with Gary. And that's what's cool for us, said Weinberger. Highlights will include excerpts from The Planets Reimagined, Three Black Kings, A New Nutcracker, Musk, To the New World, and Bach and the Blues. There will also be a surprising premiere, Weinberger said. Guest artists will perform, including the University of Northern Iowa Marching Band. Every single one of these collaborations has been great fun, and I enjoyed them all, said Kelly. The subject matter is always a big deal to me, and I have to get artistically addicted to the artistic vision. Describing the process as telling a musical story visually through his art, Kelly credits video director Jacob Mead, formerly technical director at the New Live in Cedar Falls, for helping conceptualize and animate the music-driven narratives on many of the symphony projects. The symphony's official season opener is at 7 p.m., October 21st. Beethoven and Bartok, in the Catherine Cassidy Gallagher Great Hall at the Gallagher Blue Dorn Performance Arts Center. Currently closed for construction, the facility will be partially open for the performance. Well, that certainly sounds like fun. Might want to go there to listen to great music. All right, what else do we have here? Brian's Blue Plate to Close. Eatery owner cites his health concerns. In Waterloo, one of downtown's newest restaurants will be closing permanently. Its owner cites personal health concerns. The last day of business for Brian's Blue Plate will be Saturday. On the restaurant's Facebook page, August 27th, Brian Cenk, announced his restaurant will close due to health and other reasons. The restaurant and music venue opened in November in the Best Western Plus Executive Residency at 1205 West 4th Street. A local restaurant owner, Cenk focused his eatery on a changing, inexpensive special or blue plate. He previously owned Brian's on 4th, which closed in 2018. Before that, he was a chef at Hy-Vee. He's also a local painter and musician. In a social media post, Cenk said that he will get back into painting pet portraits and other commissioned work. The Courier could not reach Cenk for an interview, but the restaurant is promoting specials such as $3 beer and mixed drinks on its Facebook page. Food will be served each night until the restaurant runs out. If anyone has a gift certificate, they are asked to redeem it by Saturday night. On Thursday night after 4 to 10, Bob Dorr will perform with his Blues Jam. On Friday from 4 to 10, Sean Sturr will take the stage and be the last live performer. There'll be a going-away party on Saturday from 4 to 10 p.m. Cenk said that the staff had been informed prior to the post. He thanked many people, including the owners of Best Western, the performers, food and beverage operators, and other local business owners who have supported him and his customers. Well, let's see what else do we have here. Local veterans get quilts of valor. In Waterloo, 11 Cedar Valley vets honored on Saturday. Local veterans will be honored Labor Day weekend as part of an annual Quilts of Valor presentation, but those involved say there is a gap in area participation. On Saturday, Quilts of Valor will present quilts to 11 local veterans at 1 p.m. at the American Legion Becker Chapman Post 138. The quilts were crafted by Kathy Baldwin and her sister-in-law, Linda Osborne, in Newton. According to Baldwin, the event is an emotional event for those involved. It's not just a matter of, oh, here's your quilt, Howard said. There's quite a story and a presentation that goes with it. And we read back their military service and what they've done since and what they did before. You'll see a lot of quivering lips and a few tears by the time we are through. Quilts of Valor was started in 2003 by Catherine Roberts, a Delaware mother whose son was serving in Iraq. Roberts said that she had a dream about how quilts could help soldiers like her son to heal from the traumas that they faced in the military. The dream was as vivid as real life. I saw a young man sitting on the side of his bed in the middle of the night, hunched over. The permeating feeling was one of utter despair. I could see his war demons clustered around, dragging him down into an emotional gutter, Roberts said of her dream to the Quilts of Valor website. Then, as if viewing a movie, I saw him in the next scene wrapped in a quilt. His whole demeanor changed from one of despair to one of hope and well-being. The quilt had made this dramatic change. However, the making of Cedar Valley's quilts have been outsourced to Jasper County. Baldwin explained that the Waterloo, Cedar Falls metro area in Iowa City are lacking people to do the quilting. There is nobody in Waterloo, Cedar Falls, or Iowa City doing Quilts of Valor. And this is really sad, Baldwin said. It's an open hole. Baldwin said that there are local residents who present quilts to Cedar Valley veterans, but not through Quilts of Valor. Baldwin explained an official quilt is nationally registered with the stamp of the organization. While she praised anyone willing to go through the effort of making a quilt for a veteran, she said that there's an added level of distinction to the official presentation. There's just a little more meaning to it than handing someone a quilt, she said. The Becker Chapman Post is located at 728 Commercial Street. Baldwin and Osborne will both be in attendance for that celebration. Trek honors firefighter, raises training funds. In Waterloo, family and friends of Greg Freshwater walked for a good cause on Tuesday. The group, which included several first responders, made the trek from Prairie Grove Park on Shawless Road to his final resting place at Zion Lutheran Church Cemetery outside the Hudson for the 6th annual Greg Freshwater Memorial Ruck. The journey was about 10 miles through rural Blackhawk County. Some wore laden packs. One person carried a thin red line American flag, signifying Freshwater service with Waterloo Fire Rescue. Freshwater's life was cut short 6 years ago on the 29th of August in 2017, when he was struck by a vehicle while jogging on Shawless Road. At the time, he was a 27-year-old firefighter training to add emergency medicine to his skill set. The annual ruck is part of a fundraiser to collect money for a scholarship named after Freshwater. Funds are used to defray the cost of sending Waterloo firefighters to advanced emergency medical technician and paramedic schools. This year, the fund started efforts to raise the scholarship fund from $50,000 to $125,000. Organizers said that this will ensure it can provide $6,000 in scholarships every year. An anonymous donor has stepped forward to match the first $25,000 as a way to jumpstart the goal. The fund is managed by Waterloo Community Foundation. Donations to the Greg Freshwater Memorial Scholarship Fund can be made online at https://wlooef.fcsuite.com. And you can also, if you want, you can also mail contributions or donations to the Greg Freshwater Memorial Scholarship. Make your check out to that. Greg Freshwater Memorial Scholarship in the memo line, mailed to Waterloo Community Foundation, Post Office Box 1253, Waterloo, in Iowa, of course, at 50704. Certainly a very, very worthy cause. All right, now, it is Thursday, so we've got events coming up for this weekend. So here are just a few of the events and things that are going on that you might want to check out this weekend in the Northeast Iowa area. We've got the on Saturday, September 2nd, you got the Food Truck Festival that's returning. Waterloo's Downtown Food Truck Festival returns for the third year on Saturday from 11 to 8 p.m., and foodies can be partake from more than 20 of the best food truck vendors from throughout the region. The event takes place at the River Loop Expo Plaza. General admission is $5. Children 12 and under are free, but must be accompanied by an adult age 18 or older. VIP tickets are $50 and include a swag bag, private VP beer garden, and free water. The festival will take place rain or shine. And what else do we have here on the 2nd of September, which is a Saturday? The WCFSO celebrates Kelly Collaboration. The Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony Orchestra will celebrate its 15-year collaboration with internationally recognized artist Gary Kelly of Cedar Falls with an outdoor concert on Saturday. The event takes place at 8 p.m. River Place Plaza in Cedar Falls. It is free and open to the public. Rain date is the 3rd of September. Kelly and the WCF Symphony formed a groundbreaking partnership that has produced a half a dozen or more world premiere musical visual storytelling narratives. Excerpts will be performed. And also guest artists include the University of Northern Iowa Marching Band. Also on Saturday, Mers and Conrad at Bar Winslow jazz musicians Chris Murs and Mike Conrad will perform at Jazz at the Black Hawk on Saturday. Music begins at 7:30 p.m. at Bar Winslow at 115 Main Street in Cedar Falls. Its Prohibition-inspired craft cocktail bar is located in the historic Black Hawk Hotel. And let's see, what else do we have here? Also on Saturday, join you and I in ISU Watch Party. Waterloo Riverfront Stadium will host a University of Northern Iowa Panthers and Iowa State University Cyclones football watch party on Saturday. Gates open at 12:30 p.m. Kickoff is at 1 p.m. Fans can bring blankets and lawn chairs and sit in the outfield to watch the game on the Waterloo Bucks video board. It's free, and it's open to the public. Concessions will be available. Outside beverages and food will not be allowed inside. Thursday, the 7th of September, the Triflemore to perform at Hearst. The Hearst Center for the Arts, 304 West Searley Boulevard in Cedar Falls, will present the Triflemore concert Thursday from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Triflemore is the transatlantic folk duo of Owen and Susan Goody, creating music of vintage British Isles folk, Baroques, and Celtic. These singer-songwriters present their own contemplative poetry and melodies, and while giving a nod to more formal traditional stylings. Monday, the 4th of September, Labor Day Encore Concert Set. Cedar Falls Municipal Band will perform their Labor Day Encore Concert from 7 to 8 p.m. at the Overman Park Band Shell at 316 West 3rd Street in Cedar Falls. Pianist David Smith will perform at 6:15 p.m., followed by the concert performed by the full band. The Cedar Falls Municipal Band is one of Iowa's oldest and most distinguished concert bands, formally organized in 1891, and bring a blanket or lawn chair for your comfort. And then also, Thursday, the 7th of September, have a bike ride and a pint. Join friends for a leisurely bike ride on Cedar Valley Trails during the Pint Night Ride on Thursday, sponsored by the Single Speed Brewing Company. The event starts at Bike Tech in Cedar Falls and runs from 5:30 to 10 p.m. Register online in advance, or for on-site registration, a QR code will be posted at Bike Tech to speed the process. Beverages tokens will be handed out at Bike Tech from 5:30 to 6:15 p.m. at Single Speed Brewing Company at 325 Commercial Street. Live music will be performed by The Set, which is made up of Brian Sink and Jacob Lampman. The event will benefit the Urban Farmers Market. For more details, visit www.singlespeedbrewing.com. All right, so lots of good things coming up for this long holiday weekend. All right, let's move on here and see what else we've got going on in the paper here today. Just a second as I continue to scroll a little bit. Here are a couple quick news briefs, and then what we're going to do is we'll be doing the obituary news on the half hour of our broadcast program. Baby slaps, bring charge. A daycare provider has been charged with allegedly slapping a crying baby hard enough to leave a bruise. Deputies with the Buchanan County Sheriff's Office arrested Megan Marie Anderson, age 29, of Quesquiton, on August 21st on the charge of child endangerment causing bodily injury, which is a felony. She was released pending a trial. According to court records, Anderson was looking after an 11-month-old girl at her Pine Street home August 18th when she allegedly slapped a child on the cheek because the child wouldn't quit crying. The slap apparently failed to quiet the child, and Anderson allegedly delivered a second slap to the cheek, records state. Authorities observed bruising on the child 2 days after the incident, records state. Council favors exploring traffic cameras in Waverly. The City Council Monday favored further exploration into installing automated traffic enforcement. Automatic traffic enforcement is the use of cameras and vehicle sensors to make images of vehicles that are speeding or running red lights in an effort to improve safety, the meeting of documents says. Police Chief Richard Purcell said that the law enforcement is looking into two higher priority areas of at this time that demonstrate a possible need for the cameras. 4th Street Southwest coming off U.S. Highway 218, as well as on the West Brenner Avenue near the intersection with 4th Street. After a two-hour discussion where a hesitancy and concerns were expressed publicly by four of the council members, the motion to move forward passed 6-1. Council members Matthew Schneider dissented. Purcell will present a draft ordinance at some point in line with what's allowed by the Department of Transportation Office of Traffic and Safety Services. And the spark for the discussion came from complaints, he said. And what else do we have here? Bullet grazes dog, misses young boy. Shooting happens near kids' bus stop in Waterloo. A bullet hit a dog and sailed past a young boy in a shooting in a Waterloo neighborhood. It happened near the corner of Fairview Avenue and Dawson Street at about 8:30 p.m. on Monday. An 11-year-old boy was letting Leo, a pit bull, out for a bathroom break in their fenced-in yard when a man came running down the street. Other people in the vehicle were going after him. They were chasing another guy, and I think dude slipped and fell. The dude dropped a gun, said the boy's father, Tyrone Jackson. Someone in the vehicle, squeezed off a shot, according to the boy's mother. The boy wasn't injured, but the round did scrape Leo's limb, missing the bone. It grazed him across his arm. I patched him up, and it was like a graze wound going across. Normally, a bullet can break a dog's arm, break a person's too, said Jackson the following morning, standing on the front step of his home. As Jackson talked, he glanced toward the sidewalk where a dozen grade schoolers with backpacks and their parents gathered. Yesterday's shooting scene is today's school bus stop. Following the shooting, everyone scattered. Police came by and recovered a single spent 9mm shell casing, said Captain Jason Feaker with the Waterloo Police Department. The boy's mother and some of the incident was captured on security cameras mounted on neighboring homes, and no arrests have been made. The shooting was the first of two gunfire incidents Monday night. Just over an hour later, at 9:45 p.m., neighbors reported hearing shots about a mile to the west. Officers found a bullet hit a house at 315 Newell Street, and authorities found a number of spent shell casings. No injuries were reported. It wasn't immediately clear if the incidents are related. All right. And we are coming up to the half-hour time of our broadcast here today, and we are reading the e-edition of the Courier. And this is Thursday, the 31st of August, the last day of the month. Unbelievable. And my name is Peter Welch. I am your narrator. And you are listening to the reading of the Courier on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network for the Blind and the Disabled. All right, let's now turn to the obituary column of today's Courier. Craig Kopecky has passed at the age of 71 in his home on Sunday, and funeral services will be at 11 a.m. on Thursday, the 31st of August, which of course is today, at Nazareth Lutheran Church, which is going on right now, at Larson Chapel in Cedar Falls with visitation between 9:30 until service time, interment at Fairview Cemetery in Cedar Falls. Dorothy McDonald, age 94, of Waverly, has passed, and she will have a funeral service at 11 a.m. on Friday, the 1st of September, at Redeemer Lutheran Church in Waverly, with Pastor Corey Smith officiating. The service will be live-streamed to the church Facebook page. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. until the time of the service at the church. Eugene Schneider has passed at the age of 91, passing away peacefully on Tuesday, the 22nd of August. And I'm just looking here quickly here. A private family graveside memorial will be held. Military honors will be conducted by Waterloo American Legion Post 138 at the Waterloo VFW Post 1623. The United States Navy Funeral Honor Guard. Memorials may be directed to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. And condolences may be left at www.locke, I'm going to spell this for you, LOCKEFUNERALSERVICES.com. And Lockett Tower is assisting the family at 414 Kimball Avenue. And the phone number for more information is 319-233-3146. And then Lucinda Starkey has passed at the age of 88 at the Mercy One Waterloo Medical Center. Services will be at 12 p.m. on Friday, the 1st of September, at the New Day Christian Center at 644 Homeacres Avenue in Evansdale, with burial at Garden of Memories Cemetery in Waterloo. And visitation from 10 a.m. until noon at the church on Friday. Memorials may be directed to the church. Condolences may also be left at the www.lockfuneralservices.com. Lockett Tower Park is also assisting the family. And again, they're at 4140 Kimball Avenue, Waterloo. And that number is 319-233-3146. Jacqueline, better known as Jackie Fischels, age 87, passed at the Unity Point Allen Hospital in Waterloo. Memorial services will be at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, the 1st of September, at Queen of Peace Catholic Church, with interment Mount Olivet Cemetery, Columbarium, both in Waterloo. Public visitation will be for 1 hour before services at the church. The Haggerty Wachoff Garup Funeral Service on South Street is handling all arrangements. Sam Smith has passed at the age of 84 at the Unity Point Allen Hospital in Waterloo. And visitation will be held on Thursday, on September 7th, from 12 noon until 2 p.m. at the St. Peter Lutheran Church in Denver. The funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. at the church, with graveside military rites to follow at St. Peter Lutheran Cemetery in Denver, given by the Acker Matthias American Legion Post 653. And in lieu of flowers, please consider a memorial to Acker Matthias American Legion Post 653 or St. Peter Lutheran Church in Denver. Online condolences also may be left at www.kaisercorson.com. And if you need more information, you can contact the Kaiser Corson Funeral Home, and they are at 319-984-5379. And Margaret DeMoss has passed at the age of 81 at Cedar Falls on August 23rd. And let's see what else they have information for her. Her family is planning a celebration of life party. For further updates, please visit her Facebook page, Friends of Margaret. Let me spell that for you. M-A-R-G-U-R-I-T-E, DeMoss, D-E-M-O-S-S. And finally, Kristen Baker has passed at the age of 58 of Iowa City, and a celebration of life is planned for Thursday, October 5th, from 4 to 7 p.m. in Lensing Funeral and Cremation Services at 605 Kirkwood Avenue in Iowa City. And in lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the family to be placed in a memorial fund that's been established in honor of Chris's grandchildren, as well for a fountain and memorial plaque. And you can also send condolences if you wish, and you can leave those at www.lensingfuneral.com. So it's lensingfuneral.com. Well, all right, let's move on here to the next section of our paper here and see what else is going on here, here in the Waterloo area. A judge declines to waive plea in fatal crash. L.A. Jefferson Jr., age 46, entered Alford plea. And that's A-L-F-O-R-D, Alford plea. A judge has declined to rescind a Waterloo man's pleas to charges that he fled after hitting a bicyclist in 2019. L.A. Jefferson Jr., age 46, entered an Alford plea to charges of homicide by vehicle by recklessness leaving the scene of an injury accident and operating while intoxicated on the 16th of August in connection with the crash that claimed the life of Dalail Salek, age 22, of Waterloo. Less than a day later, Jefferson filed a prose motion seeking, among other things, to take back his plea. During a Friday hearing in Black Hawk County District Court, Jefferson argued that he didn't want to accept the plea offer. "I was under duress," Jefferson said, explaining the plea came as a jury selection was underway to begin his trial if the plea didn't go through. And weeks earlier, he indicated he wanted to proceed representing himself instead of having an attorney. "I felt like I was at a dead end, and that was the only option," Jefferson said. Jefferson also noted that documents associated with the plea incorrectly included a charge of leaving the scene of a fatality accident, a more serious charge than what he had agreed to. He also said that he no longer wanted to represent himself. All right, we are now at the section of the paper. We're now in the opinion and the op-ed part of the paper here. And let's see what we got here. We've got a political cartoon. The sign says, "Putin Opposition Party Meeting." Well, in the background, all you see are tombstones with all of the people that were killed by Putin, shot or disappeared or poisoned. So I think they make their point about what happened to those individuals because of Mr. Putin. All right, let's see. What do we have here? This is the another view section. This is from the Wall Street Journal, by the way. And it says that Powell right to stay course versus inflation. Federal chairman may disappoint Wall Street, but American consumers should be pleased. Investors these days parse Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell every remark for any sign that the pain of higher interest rates will end soon. He disappointed them again recently in his annual speech at a central banking conference in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, which is much to the good. Although inflation has moved down from its peak, a welcome development, it remains too high, Powell said. He added that the central bank will keep monetary policy at its current restrictive level until more evidence inflation is truly whipped. Many on Wall Street were hoping to hear a more dovish signal that the Fed would declare victory soon, perhaps starting this year or early next. This would entail a premature rate cut while hoping inflation would continue to drift downward. The Fed chief pointed specifically to prices for services, excluding shelter, as having remained sticky. Powell's speech was consistent with his earlier promises to avoid the stop-go policy errors of the 1970s. In that decade, the Fed's premature declaration of victory over inflation led to a price increase ratchet that had to be cured with ever higher interest rates. We were especially pleased to see him explicitly rebuff the argument from some economists that the Fed should raise its inflation target to 3% from 2%. Such a change would undermine the Fed's anti-inflation credibility. It would also add pressure on the Fed to ease its monetary tightening once inflation is in the neighborhood of 3%, even if that's premature. One reason to avoid a stop-go monetary repeat is that, as Powell noted, the Fed is uncertain about how the modern economy responds to its policy changes. Economic growth, employment, wages, and prices have often not behaved in ways that the Fed's economic models predicted. Powell described this as navigating by the stars under cloudy skies. This humility is welcome from the Fed, but we'd add a note of caution about Powell's approach. His recent speech reinforced the extent to which the Fed remains beholden to the discredited Phillips curve, which posts a direct relationship between employment and inflation. Powell and his colleagues still believe that they must slow economic growth and weaken the labor market somehow to guarantee that inflation remains subdued. Ample experience has shown that low inflation can coexist with a low employment rate and strong economic growth. Inflation is its own beast, and the Fed's job is to maintain price stability. Investors had hoped that Powell would give them all clear on inflation and signal an early rate cut. Mortgage rates are now above 7%. In particular, and are giving politicians a case of the jitters. But households still digesting 40-year high price increases and a 2-year decline in real wages will welcome the signal that Powell plans to stay the anti-inflation course. Well, that's interesting. As we continue to have that issue in our country. All right, what else do we have going on here in the paper here? This is now the Cedar Valley section of the paper that I'm reading. Superintendent gets 3% salary increase. Salary and benefits in contract to total $238,450 annually. In Waterloo, the superintendent of Waterloo Community Schools is receiving a 3% increase in his salary. The Board of Education Monday unanimously approved the boosting Jared Smith's annual pay to $221,450 and extended his 3-year contract until June 30, 2026. Smith also will receive a $10,000 tax-sheltered annuity and a car allowance of $7,000. His salary plus benefits will total $238,450. When he was hired last year, after former Superintendent Jane Lindemann retired, his starting salary and benefits package was $232,000. Smith's 3% raise comes after raises were approved for administrators and employees represented by bargaining groups. Earlier this year, school administrators received a 3.24% salary increase. Employees whose contracts are negotiated by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Local 2749, the Waterloo Education Support Personnel, and the Waterloo Education Association also received raises. Franklin County deputies justified in fatal shooting. In Des Moines, Franklin County Sheriff's deputies were justified in the June fatal shooting of a man who pointed what turned out to be a pellet gun at them and thanked them for shooting him. The Iowa Department General offices found that Franklin County deputies Chase Winandy and Bed Baskerville were justified in the shooting of Matt Thu, T.J. Davis, age 30, on June 20th. Report issued on Monday, the office concluded that the actions of the deputies who shot Davis after he drunkenly aimed a gun at them were legally justified and that no criminal charges are warranted. The Attorney General's conclusion was based on a review and investigation by the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation. The investigation found that on the evening of June 20th, Franklin County's dispatch received two 911 calls reporting that Davis and the caller's former partner was at her home, intoxicated, suicidal, and armed with a gun. At the time, the caller's minor son was inside the home and alone. The 911 caller also reported that Davis said he wanted to be shot by the police. Two Franklin County deputies were dispatched to the residence and found Davis in the driveway with a gun. The deputies immediately instructed Davis to drop his weapon and pleaded with him to do so at least 17 times. Body cam footage showed that Davis then approached the deputies, aimed his gun at them, at which point the deputies opened fire. After securing Davis's weapon, the deputies rendered medical aid and called for an ambulance. During that time, the report states that Davis stated to the deputies, "Thank you for shooting me." Davis died while en route to the hospital. The report is issued under the Attorney General's independent authority under Iowa Code to investigate or prosecute conduct of law enforcement that results in death. Virginia Loan Fund provides financing to all in grocers in Waterloo. Rochdale Capital, a community development loan fund out of Arlington, Virginia, will provide a $412,000 revolving line of credit to a downtown grocery store currently under construction. The loan will cover final building costs for all in grocers and provide working capital after the store opens in October. The loan fund's mission is to promote cooperatives and community ownership, advance equity, diversify and inclusion, and provide capital access in under-resourced communities. Located on Waterloo's northeast side, the store will be a 20,000-square-foot full-service grocery store that will provide fresh fruit and vegetables in a U.S. Department of Agricultural-defined food dessert. Location will help address the lack of access to basic needs and improve the quality of health and standards of living in the community. The building will also include Grandma's Hands, a family-style restaurant, also clean laundry laundromat, and the 1619 Freedom School. The main challenge is to a community that has not seen investment dollars in decades is finding that right financial partner who truly understands the journey ahead. Rodney Anderson, co-owner of All In Grocers, said in a news release, "The team at Rochdale Capital was the perfect fit to finalize the seven-year battle our project took to complete." All right, let's move on to something that's going to be very important for all of us in the next day, actually, starting Friday. Yes, folks, you got it. We're talking about heat again. Let's start with today with our weather forecast. Today, it will be a high of 82 degrees, which is great, and a low of 54 degrees. Tomorrow, things begin to warm up, mostly sunny, windy, and warm, high of 89, low of 61. Then on Saturday, mostly sunny, breezy, and hot, high of 94, low of 62. Sunday, even hotter, sunny and breezy, very hot, high of 95, a low of 66. And the outlook for Monday, high of 97 and a low of 69. And it's supposed to continue to get hotter than that as we go through the week. Let's take a look also at the national forecast while we are here. As Idalia prepares to head into the Atlantic today, rain and gusty winds will gradually taper off in the Carolinas, but rough surf will remain a problem from Florida to Massachusetts into this weekend. As cool air refreshes the northeast, heat will build over the central states. Storms will dampen the southwest as rain wets the northwest. Well, my golly, we could sure use that rain, but it doesn't look like we're going to get any of the wet stuff here for quite a while. But it is sorely needed, that is for sure. Let's take a look at some quick metro briefs. Cruise Uni, which is UNI, event planned on Sunday in Cedar Falls. The tradition of cruising University Avenue will continue on Labor Day weekend. The first ever Cruise UNI event will be held from 4 to 10 p.m. on Sunday. A show and shine will kick off festivities with a 93.5, the Mix broadcasting live at 3727 University Avenue, the old Hobby Lobby in Waterloo. In addition to a variety of family-friendly activities, cars will take to the streets from 6 to 10 p.m. The event is made possible by the generous support of RPM Motor Company and many other sponsors. Well, that sounds like fun. Okay, let's move on here. What else do we have going on here in the paper today? All right, let's now take a look at the next section of our paper. We've only got a couple more minutes here to go, but this is the 360 degrees section of the paper. This is for National and World Reports. And like I said, we don't have a lot of time left, but I'm going to read something here regarding the Titanic. Feds are trying to stop trip to hallowed gravesite. In Norfolk, Virginia, the U.S. government is trying to stop planned expedition to recover items of historical interest from the sunken Titanic, citing a federal law and an international agreement that treat the shipwreck as a hallowed gravesite. The expedition is being organized by RMS Titanic Incorporated, a Georgia-based firm that owns the salvage rights to the world's most famous shipwreck. The company exhibits artifacts that were recovered from the wreck site at the bottom of the North Atlantic, from silverware to a piece of the Titanic's hull. The government's challenge comes more than 2 months after the Titan submersible imploded near the sunken ocean liner, killing 5 people. And that was so, so very tragic. In some cities, civilians answer mental health calls. Goal is to de-escalate situations with clinicians or EMTs. In Denver, Christian Glass was a geology geek, a painter, and a young man beset by a mental health crisis when he called 911 for help getting his car unstuck in a Colorado mountain town last year. When sheriff's deputies arrived, he refused to get out of the car after saying that supernatural beings were after him. Body camera video shows the officers shouted, threatened, and coaxed. Glass made heart shapes with his hands and prayed, "Dear Lord, please don't let them break the window." Well, they did. The 22-year-old grabbed a small knife. Then he was hit with beanbags, rounds, stun gun charges, ultimately bullets that killed him, and led to a murder charge against one deputy and a criminally negligent homicide charge against another. As a part of a $19 million settlement this spring with Glass parents, Colorado's Clear Creek County this month joined a growing roster of U.S. communities that respond to nonviolent mental health crises with clinicians and EMTs or paramedics instead of the police. The initiatives have spread rapidly in recent years, particularly among the nation's biggest cities. Data gathered by the Associated Press show that at least 14 of the 20 most populous U.S. cities are hosting or starting such programs, sometimes called civilian alternative or non-police response teams. Well, that does it here for the reading of the e-edition of the Courier here for Thursday, and I am your narrator, Peter Welch, and you have been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network for the Blind. Thank you, everybody, for listening today. Get out and enjoy the weather before that heat wave returns, and have a wonderful, wonderful holiday weekend. Bye-bye, everybody.
I'm getting older. Do I need to worry about falling?
Yes, you do. Every year, one in four people 65 and older will experience a fall, and many result in serious injury. The majority of falls happen at home, so take a look around. Replace bulbs and add lighting to help you see obstacles. Remove things that can make you trip. Fix uneven steps and floors, and install handrails in bathrooms and on stairs. Consider balance or strength training exercises, which can help with agility. Get your eyes and hearing checked regularly. Changes in your hearing can affect your balance. To learn more, please talk to your doctor about steps you can take to help prevent a fall. You can also visit aarpfoundation.org or medicaremadeclear.com/falls. This message was brought to you by United Healthcare and AARP Foundation.